James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Lies! Lies, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. Can we get progress?
Any questions before we proceed?
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Yes, the one and only, I don't know the only, but the one for sure, Guy James. And it is a pleasure to have all of you with me this afternoon. We hope to have a informative and entertaining program for you this afternoon. I don't know for sure what we'll concentrate on today. Today's going to be one of those helter-skelter days, I think. I'm not sure, but it just could turn into that. I don't know. Lots of news, but nothing earth-shattering, I suppose, if it weren't for the shoe incident. Oh, my. Oh, my. I don't know. I'll talk about that in just a minute or two. We are coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. Good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. And before I go any further, I want to thank Eric, John, and Carolyn, and Scott, and Maura. You got that? Eric, John, and Carolyn, Scott, and Maura. Thanks to all of you for responding to something I had mentioned on the program. Thank you so very, very much. Yes, we are coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida. It's a lovely day, about 78 degrees, and the sun is shining and all that, blah, blah, blah. You get tired of hearing all that. That is why the roads are choked with people right now. Because we have nice weather and a lot of other people don't. And I don't know. It's one of those things when it comes to this time of year, you don't, if you're one of the locals here, like myself, you don't do a lot of traveling around. You really don't. You don't go into town as much as you might. You just kind of stick close to home because, frankly, it's a bit difficult getting around. It really is. All the traffic, all the out-of-state cars. And I'm not complaining. It's one of those deals here. I think when someone moves to Florida, I think everybody feels about the same. Once you get here and move in yourself, you think, well, I wish they'd close the doors and not let anyone else in because it's getting too crowded. Problem being where the studio is here and where I live as well, just not enough roads in Florida. The terrible, terrible planning. You would think some third graders planned the roads around here and all over Florida for that matter. Yes, you've got U.S. Interstate 75 and 10 and 95, but any place else, it's hell to pay here with roads. It really is. I mean, the city's got decent roads, but you get out of town, there's only two roads around here, north and south. One's the interstate, and the other one is what they call U.S. 41 around here. And so it causes all the north-south traffic, which most of it is, to just be all jammed up, and they just don't plan ahead. Well, here I go, complaining. Yes, I am complaining. I didn't hear Bush complaining, Junior, about the shoe. yes, the shoe. Amazing to me When I saw that video, the infamous shoe throwing incident yesterday, I honestly, now I'm going to tell you the truth, just how I feel. I was a bit sad for a moment. It was kind of like the Nixon thing when he, you know, said he was going to resign. I felt sad for the presidency. I felt sad that someone would have enough contempt for our country to throw a shoe at our elected leader. But then my cooler head side prevailed, and I thought about it for a moment, and I found myself thinking, I wish one of those shoes would have hit Bush right between the eyes. Oh, and wouldn't some of our right-leaning friends love to hear me say that? Maybe they will, and I hope they do. And I mean it. I'm not kidding around. I know that some of you will disagree with that statement, but I can't help it. The guy goes to Iraq where he knows the people hate him. And the only reason he's going there is he's trying to salvage whatever minuscule part of his legacy, if there is any legacy at all. He's trying to salvage something, anything. And then this happens. So personally, I think it was very ill-advised for him to go there. And personally, I think he deserved it. The guy who threw the shoes was merely expressing the general feeling of his countrymen. There's a burning hatred toward Bush in that country and many countries around the world against Bush and anything American, especially in that part of the world. And who can blame them? They've got murder, torture, mass killings. Their infrastructure was destroyed. The schools and hospitals are almost non-existent. Who can blame them? Except for a handful of radical neocons who still believe we did them such a huge favor by getting rid of Saddam for them. I've heard many accounts of people over there saying they wish that Saddam was back, that they had it much better then. But the shoe-throwing guy, I can't think of his name offhand, he will forever be a hero in that part of the world. I don't think there's any question about that. He is right now. I heard on the news earlier that they had offered to give him a house. I also heard he probably got a pretty good beating out of that from officials over there. So, we'll see. We'll see. But, anyway, hats off to the guy. And I know that's going to piss some people off, me saying that. But, just one of those things. I can't help it. The sight of him ducking those shoes. What, we all seen it how many times now? I don't know how many times I watched it after they started showing it last night almost nonstop. I couldn't get enough of it. The sight of him ducking the shoes, and to think that he sees himself as some sort of a leader, it really is comical. Very, very comical. But anyway, I guess enough of the shoe incident. yes. 866-546-5254. I just can't get that image out of my head. If the guy would have thrown that first one 2 inches lower, he would have nailed him. 2 inches. And they were both good shots. But yeah, what's going to happen now when Bush goes to a press conference? You're going to have to check your shoes at the door, do you suppose? I don't know. Maybe so. Maybe so. Would have been a good idea yesterday. But here's just this poor guy. He's laying on the floor. They're sitting on his head. Now he's in his stocking feet, wearing the white socks. They hauled him off to who knows where. Probably hasn't had a very good time since then. I'm sure of it. But I've heard some Arab folks, and actually not Arab folks, people from Iraq, saying that he deserved it. And there were demonstrations in the streets for them to let this guy go. And it didn't appear to me that people there were embarrassed by it. And of course, you know, in the Middle East, it is an insult to show somebody the bottom, the sole of your shoe. It is a personal insult. And the guy meant it as an insult. And I think he also meant to whack him one with those shoes. That's what they tell me. One of my friends I talked to today from that part of the world, actually from Syria, said that is a very, very serious insult. So, who knows? Many things I want to talk about today. I do want to talk about the auto loan or bailout that whatever you prefer to call it. It seems that most of the people in the country, I saw a survey today that said 55% of the people in the country polled do not want to help the auto industry. They don't want to help them, which I kind of think that's a shame. And it's a shame to me because it's probably the 55% of the people who don't work for a union, who don't work for a wage. I don't know. I have no way of knowing for sure. But it's just a doggone shame. And there are some things about this auto bailout or loan problem, and I think it's more of a loan situation. And it appears to me that Bush is going to try and do something about it. There are some issues with the whole thing that are greatly disturbing to me. And if everybody in America knew the whole story about some of the senators from the South and why they voted against it and why they're leading the charge against it, maybe they'd feel differently about it. Maybe they would. Oh, we can't help the auto industry, says what's his name from Alabama? We had, Shelby. Shelby from Alabama. You had Miss McConnell from Kentucky and DeMint from South Carolina and who else? Corker from Tennessee. Leading the fight. Not going to have anything to do with this. No. Have you discovered what a bunch of bastards these people are? Now forget whether or not, for a moment, if you can. Look past how you feel about this one way or another. What I want to explain to you are the motives of these guys. The motives. They have their own auto companies in the South now. They want to become the new Detroit. They want no union plants down there, and they want to reap the rewards from it. They wouldn't mind if Detroit disappeared. They wouldn't mind that at all. This has been nothing more than an attempt to bust the unions, to shut down Detroit, to shut down the American automotive machine industry, and let all those nice Southerners in the South take up the slack, you see. Well, just one thing, you know, and they preach about, oh, we can't be passing out, socialists. We can't be giving money to these people. We can't give money to General Motors. We can't give money to Chrysler, to Ford, or to Ford. We can't lend them money. That's socialistic. So says Shelby, so says McConnell and DeMint and Corker. Did you know that in Alabama, the state of Alabama gave Mercedes $253 million in state and local tax breaks. They also helped and pay for training the workers. They also paid for improving the land that they bought. Did you know that for Honda, in 1999, they sweetened the pot there. They gave them $158 million in similar perks. And they added another $90 million when the company expanded the plant 3 years. Oh, no, we can't give these automakers anything. Now, we can give the foreign automakers all kinds of things if they locate in our southern states and employ non-union workers. We'll give them anything they want. Toyota came in. They gave them $29 million in taxpayer gifts. And, of course, Alabama's not alone in this. Mr. Corker, Senator Corker, standing up and saying, oh, yes. And one thing he forgot to mention. that Tennessee got Volkswagen to come in and build a manufacturing plant right outside of Chattanooga. They gave them tax breaks. They gave them free training. They also helped get the land ready. $577 million worth. Then in 2005, the state of Tennessee gave Nissan $197 million to relocate their headquarters from Southern California. Knocked off another $20 million in utilities. In 1992, South Carolina, home of Mr. DeMint, got a BMW plant for $150 million in giveaways. If I'm not mistaken, I think that plant's somewhere between, it's right around Spartanburg, I think. I know I've passed it. So South Carolina gives them $150 million. And in Mississippi in 2003, Nissan was given $363 million. And in Georgia, Kia is building a plant as we speak. And they're getting a $415 million break from the state. And these numbers go on and on and on. From these southern senators who stand there and say, we can't be giving socialistic aid to the big three auto companies. By God, they'd take it for Honda and BMW and Mercedes and Nissan and Kia, wouldn't they? Just so long as they have no unions in their state, in their auto plants. Gosh, it just happens that all these guys are Republicans. They hate unions. They hate them. Even experts. Experts for the Tennessee Center of Business and Economic Research said it's hard to show how this money that they've passed out to these foreign automakers is going to produce enough tax revenue. And a lot of other people wonder whether these incentive packages from the southern states, they wonder if those packages don't go a little bit too far to divert taxpayer dollars from things they really need in their states. I gave you that example about Tennessee kissing Nissan's ass to come in with this $197 million gift. That was the same time. That was at the same time the state of Tennessee was cutting 170,000 low-income adults from its Medicaid rolls. And when Alabama gave all that money to the Mercedes plant, there's a school right next to that Mercedes plant. A school that was designed to hold 290 kids. They had 540 in it. We can't give money to the big three automakers. Can't do it, said the southern senators. Some others as well, but they led the fight. I cannot sit here and say that the big three are without fault. You know my position on that. They most certainly have plenty of transgressions to answer for. But I also know that there are approximately 3 million jobs, depending on the big three. And when someone says to me, oh, well, those will just all be absorbed and we'll get over it soon, that's plain BS. Mostly that kind of talk is coming from these southerners who want to, at all cost, break the unions. I don't know what it is about the South and unions. I don't know what it is about people hating the fact that one human being would get together with another and another and another in order to protect themselves from the rich and powerful. From the industrialists in this country, whom if they had their way, and you know You know I'm telling you the truth here. If they had their way, the EPA conditions and the working conditions would be what they were at the start of the 1900s. You know I'm telling the truth on that. You know I am. You know the plants would be as modern as they could be for maximum production, and you also know they would be paying them as little as possible, just enough to feed their families so they could come to work the next day. You know that is the truth. You know they would be polluting the skies of America all they wanted to. We've needed the unions in this country. And they've made some bad mistakes. But we've needed them. And it just irritates me when these southern senators from Alabama and Mississippi and South Carolina, particularly in Tennessee, particularly those four states, in particular those four states. A lot of good people live in those four states, and there are a lot of numbskulls that live in those four states. A favorite slang word of my dad, numbskull. Oh, he loved that. But it is genuinely irritating to read that. So I don't know what's going to become of the auto companies. I do know they need some reorganizing. I know they need to do a lot of redesigns. They need to be lean and mean and get ready for the times that are upon us. It may well be that the auto industry in this country never comes back to what it was. That may well be. Same thing happened to the steel industry many years ago, and it was literally driven out of business in this country, and now the steel industry is doing okay here because they restructured, they learned how to do things, and of course there's a lot of foreign steel companies in this country as well. But isn't it a shame that one of the industries the middle class of this country was built on, is now about to become extinct, along with the jobs of around 3 million people. Oh, yes, some of them will be absorbed in somehow. And, oh, yes, the Hondas and the Nissans and the Kias and all these people, they'll absorb a lot of that car production, happily so. And they'll do it with non-union workers for as long as they can get away with it. But I'll promise you this. I will promise you this. I don't know that I will live long enough to see it, but it is absolutely inevitable. It is inevitable that the union movement will come back in this country. There will be a resurgence of the union in this country. It will happen. And there will be union movements in Mexico. There will be union movements in China. There will be union movements everywhere that there's any major production going on. Because human nature, being what it is, will show you that the rich and powerful and those that own the companies will do everything they possibly can to keep the workers downtrodden and without anything except enough to eat, stay healthy enough to come back to work the next day. Is that a cynical view of the corporatist? Is that a cynical view of the industrialist in this world? Yes, it is. But my thoughts on that are not without merit. They're not without the backing of history. Men died in Detroit at the River Rouge plant at the hands of thugs of Henry Ford because they were trying to organize. Men died in coal mines. People died organizing union labor in this country. I think no one should forget that. All right, I won't preach any more about it today. I'm just sick to death that where the trend is that we're going here. I am. I had a note around here that maybe I can find it that dovetails in with what I'm talking about here with the auto production. And I know many of you have seen this by now. It was even printed in my local newspaper, right-wing, hardcore right-wing that it is. But when you pay the money, you can get it printed. And the local Ford dealer put this in and attributed the article to the man who actually wrote it, a gentleman by the name of Jim Jackson. Some of you have heard this and some of you haven't. And I think you all ought to know about it, so I'm gonna read some of this. And I see Elo lets me know that the GM plant in Ontario, that's Mansfield, Ohio, on US Route 30 on the western side of Mansfield, Ohio, is laying off about 300 people, and I know some of those folks. I know people who have worked in that plant for a long, long time. So let me read this letter to you. Editor, as I watched the coverage of the fate of the U.S. auto industry, one alarming and frustrating fact hits me right between the eyes. The fate of our nation's economic survival is in the hands of some congressmen who are completely out of touch and act without knowledge of an industry that affects almost every person in our nation. The same lack of knowledge is shared with many journalists whom are irresponsible when influencing the opinion of millions of viewers. Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama has doomed the industry, calling it a dinosaur. No, Mr. Shelby, you are the dinosaur with ideas stuck in the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. You and the uninformed journalists and senators that hold on to myths that are not relative in today's world. When you say that the big three build vehicles nobody wants to buy, you must have overlooked that GM outsold Toyota by about 1.2 million vehicles in the U.S., and Ford outsold Honda by 850,000 and Nissan by 1.2 million in the U.S. GM was the world's number one automaker, beating Toyota by 3,000 units. When you claim inferior quality comes from the big three, did you realize that Chevy makes the Malibu and Ford makes the Fusion that were both rated over the Camry and Accord by J.D. Power? Independent survey on initial quality. Did you bother to read the consumer report that rated Ford on par with good Japanese automakers? Did you realize Big Three's gas guzzlers include the 33 mile per gallon Malibu that beats the Honda Accord? And for 09, Ford introduces the hybrid Fusion, whose 39 mile per gallon is the best midsize, beating the Camry hybrid. Ford's Focus beats the Corolla, and Chevy's Cobalt beats the Civic. When you ask how many times we're going to bail them out, you must be referring to 1980. The only big three bailout was Chrysler, who paid back $1 billion plus interest. GM and Ford have never received government aid. And when you criticize the big three for building so many pickups, surely you've noticed the attempts Toyota and Nissan have made, spending billions trying to get a piece of that pie. Perhaps it bothers you that for 31 straight years, Ford's F-Series has been the best-selling vehicle. Ford and GM have dominated this market. And when you see the new 09 F-150, you'll agree this won't change soon. Did you realize that both GM and Ford offer more hybrid models than Nissan or Honda? Between 2005 and 2007, Ford alone has invested more than $22 billion in research and development of technologies such as EcoBoost, Flex Fuel, Clean Diesel, hybrids, plug-in hybrids, and hydrogen cars. It's 2008, and the quality of the vehicles coming out of Detroit are once again the best in the world. Perhaps Senator Shelby isn't really that blind. Maybe he realizes the quality shift to American. Maybe it's the fact that the state of Alabama has given so much to land factories from Honda, Hyundai, and Mercedes-Benz that he's more concerned about their continued growth than he is about the people of our country. Senator Shelby's disdain for, quote, government subsidies, unquote, is very hypocritical. In the early 90s, he was the driving force behind a $253 million incentive package to Mercedes, plus Alabama agreed to purchase 2,500 vehicles from Mercedes. While the bridge loan the Big Three is requesting will be paid back, Alabama's 180,000 plus per job was pure incentive. Senator Shelby, not only are you out of touch, you are a self-serving hypocrite who is prepared to ruin our nation because of lack of knowledge and lack of due diligence in making your opinions and decisions. After 9/11, the Detroit Three and Harley-Davidson gave $40 million plus emergency vehicles to the recovery efforts. What was given to the 9/11 relief effort by the Asian and European auto manufacturers? Zero. Nada. Zip. We live in a world of free trade, world economy, and we've not been able to produce products as cost efficiently. While the governments of other auto-producing nations subsidize their automakers, our government may be ready to force its demise. While our automakers have paid union wages, benefits, and legacy debt, our Asian competitors employ cheap labor, we are at an extreme disadvantage in production cost, and although many UAW concessions begin in 2010, many lawmakers think it's not enough. Some point the blame to corporate management. I would like to speak of Ford Motor Company. The company has streamlined by reducing our workforce by 51,000 since 2005, closing 17 plants and cutting expenses. Product and future product is excellent, and the company is focused on one Ford. This is a company poised for success. Ford product quality and corporate management have improved light years since the nightmare of Jacques Nasser, their last CEO. Thank you, Alan Mulaney, and the best auto company management team in the business. The financial collapse caused by the secondary mortgage fiasco and the greed of Wall Street has led to a $700 billion bailout of the industry that created the problem. AIG spent nearly $1 million on three company excursions to lavish resorts and hunting destinations. And Paulson is saying no to a $250 billion foreclosure relief, and the whole thing is a mess. So when the Big Three ask for 4% of that $700 billion, $25 billion, to save the country's largest industry, there is obviously opposition. But does it make sense to reward the culprits of the problem with $700 billion unconditionally and ignore the victims? Mr. Jackson closes in saying, as a Ford dealer, I feel our portion of the $25 billion will never be touched and is not necessary. Ford currently has a $25 billion of liquidity. However, the effect of the bankruptcy by GM will hurt the suppliers we all do business with. A Chapter 11 bankruptcy by any manufacturer would cost retirees their health care and their retirements. Chances are GM would recover from Chapter 11 with a better business plan with much less expense. So who foots the bill if GM or all three go a Chapter 11? All that extra health care, unemployment, loss of tax base, and some forgiven debt goes back to the taxpayers, us, with no chance of repayment. This would be much worse than a loan with the intent of repayment. So while it's debatable whether a loan or Chapter 11 is better for the Big Three, A $25 billion loan is definitely better for the taxpayers and the economy for our country. So I'll end, says Mr. Jackson, where I began, on the quality of the products of Detroit. Before you, Mr. or Mrs. Journalist, continue to misinform the American public and turn them against one of the great industries that helped build this nation, I must ask you one question. Before you, Mr. or Madam Congressman, vote to end health care and retirement benefits for 1 million retirees, eliminate 2.5 million of our nation's jobs, lose the technology that will lead us into the future, and create an economic disaster, including hundreds of billions of tax dollars lost, I ask this question not in the rhetorical sense, I ask it in the sincere, literal way. Can you tell me, have you driven a Ford lately? Mr. Jim Jackson. He is the owner of Elkins Fordland in Elkins, West Virginia. Man did a service to the industry by writing that very good letter. I agree with him. We're going to go away and come back in just a minute. We're going to pause for a song or two, and we'll be right back.
Oh, got my window open wide. I got my window open wide. Got a good woman by my side. Got a good woman by my side. Now this kind of day has no night. Yeah, this kind of day has no night. And I ain't got much on my mind. And I ain't got much on my mind. I know something good this way comes. Now watching the streets filling up. Watching the streets filling up. In the shade of the summer sun. In the shade of the summer sun. Got sweet apple pie on the stove. Got sweet apple pie on the stove. The birds, they're all flying low. The birds, they're all flying low. Cause they know something good this way comes. Yeah, something good this way comes. The trouble dog is not moving mountains, but digging the ground that you're on. If it's true that good fortune gives no change, we got just what it takes. Call it up on my coat. Yeah, call it up on my coat. Trucks are pulling in for the show. The trucks are pulling in for the show. The grasshopper jump in the road. The grasshopper jump in the road. Kids, they're all running home. The kids, they're all running home. Cause they know something good this way comes. Yeah, something good this way comes. The trouble dog is not moving mountains, but digging the ground that you're on. If it's true that good fortune gives no change, we got just what it takes. Ooh. Ooh. I got my window open wide. I got my window open wide. Got a good woman by my side. I got a good woman by my side. And I
know something good this way comes. There's something good this way comes. There's something good this way comes.
Oh, yeah, something good this way comes. Thank you for joining us here today. We hope something good comes of the show today. It'll be really good if you would join us, 866-546-5254. Love to have you join us here on the Guy James Show today, coming to you live from the beautiful studios here in Southwest Florida, here in Paradise. Have you been out doing any Christmas shopping? I ended up at a store yesterday, I guess it was, and I was surprised to see the numbers of people in the parking lot. It was kind of a strip mall type. Well, it was a mall. The new malls, I don't know about where you are, but it seems like here in Southwest Florida, all of the new malls that you build are not indoor malls anymore. They're just like big town centers. In fact, one of them close by here is called the Gulf Coast Town Center. And you know, they have streets that wind around and beautiful sidewalks and landscaping and all that. But they're outdoors. You're not walking around an indoor mall. And I know of at least one in Columbus, Ohio that is that way as well. So I don't know where you live, if they're doing that or not. But I was at the mall, and the parking lot was just full of people, and I went into an office supply store. It was an Office Max store. Needed some printer ink, again. And boy, isn't that something. You can buy a printer for $6 now, and, well, I'm stretching it, but God, the price you have to pay for the ink. Yeah, I know. I've tried the refilling deal. It works on some models, but not on the kinds of printers that I have now. I have a printer in my other office and a printer here at the studio, and I try and keep the same kind for both of them each time, and I look for bargains. But I think this last time around, I love the printers. Love the printers, but I think I should do more research on how much ink it takes to run them next time around. I know I've spent far more on ink than the printers ever cost. No question about it. Anyway, let me get back to the story. I'm wandering off here. I was at this store, and I went from there, and there were a lot of people shopping. And I went from there to a Best Buy store, and I went from there to a Target store, and I end up not spending a dime, which was my intent in the first place, except to buy the ink. The store didn't have the ink that I needed, so I... But anyway, I went in four or five different stores, and I didn't spend any money. But it was remarkable to me to watch the number of people exiting these stores with no packages in hand. No packages in hand. Now, first of all, I really don't go shopping without intent to buy something I need usually. But it is interesting to me to see how many people right now are out and about, and yet they're not buying anything. Just an interesting observance of mine. Maybe it's the same where you are as well. I do know that stores are offering unbelievable sales on some things. Many, many places offering. I got an ad today from a electronic company offering a Vizio 37-inch HD TV for $449. Their regular $669, which at $669 is not a bad price. It's the $720 as opposed to the $1080, but it's the $720, and it does sell for at least $669 most places, and you might see it on wild sale for maybe $50 less than that, but $449 for the Vizio TV. That's a deal. It really is a deal. So they're offering some fantastic bargains. The question is, do people have enough money to take advantage of these bargains? I don't know. I'm told that the credit card usage is down a bit I don't know whether that's reliable or not. It's kind of anecdotal information from some people I know in retail, but they are telling me that credit card usage is down. Is it because people are maxed out? Is it because of the oppressive rules by the credit card companies against almost everybody? We're going to see some of that change. CNN Money had an article in the Fed set to vote Thursday on a number of key protections for credit card customers. Now imagine that, if you will. The Fed actually doing something to help consumers against the credit card companies. That would be a first, wouldn't it? Because now, you know, ever since the credit card company started, it's been do whatever you want to the consumer and we'll look the other way. That's what it's been. But on Thursday, regulators are going to vote to rein in some of the more controversial credit card practices. That's going to prohibit banks from practices like raising the interest rates on pre-existing credit card balances, unless a payment's over 30 days late. And also to apply payments in a way that maximizes interest penalties. So they're actually going to keep them from raising rates on credit card balances. That would be a great thing. A lot of them are out there doing that right now. These regulations probably won't take effect until 2010, but a spokesman for the American Bankers Association, says it'll fundamentally change the relationship between cardholders and banks, these new rules. It's going to mean an end to the double cycle billing, which is averages out the balance from two previous bills. That means that consumers who carry a balance can get hit with retroactive interest on their previous month's bill, even if they've already paid it off. Consumers are also going to be given a reasonable amount of time to make payments, and payments would be applied to higher rate balances first to reduce interest penalties and fees. They're going to have to say what time of day that the payment is due. And any changes to accounts would be in bold or listed separately. Some of the ways they've been doing it now is, oh, by the way, did you know we've got to raise your interest just a couple of cents, you know, that kind of thing. So it's going to be a good thing when they do this. Americans have about $976 billion in revolving credit. And 4.9% of all the credit cards were delinquent in the third quarter. That's according to the latest data from the Federal Reserve. And the industry has been mostly deregulated since the 1980s. Oh my, haven't we heard that before? Deregulated, and we've seen the effects of that. During the 1980s, let me see. Deregulation, 1980s. 1980s deregulation. Wait, I'm connecting the dots here. Oh, Reagan, let's deregulate everything and let the companies screw the public as much as they want to and as often as they want to, Reagan. Yes, sir. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what comes of this. They say the banks are going to fight back, of course. They say they're going to, the introductory offers and 0% balance transfers are likely to be scaled back. And they'll do what they can, but boy, if ever there was a group of people that were just authorized to steal, it is the credit card companies, is it not? Man, oh man, do they get away with it. Amazing. Once again, I do want to mention, and I'm going to mention it a couple more times during the show today, I'd like to thank Eric, John and Carolyn, Scott, and Maura, and they know why. And thank you very much to all of those folks. We're now hearing that we're going to have a second mortgage disaster on the horizon. Isn't that lovely to think about? Do you know anybody that's having mortgage problems? I do. I know somebody who's tried to work with his bank. I know a couple of people having problems, and they're going about it two different ways. But the guy and his wife, I want to mention, because of their big medical bills, they refinanced their home about 4 years ago when things were good around here concerning property values. And since that time, you all know the story, since that time the value of their home has dropped by over 50%. Yeah, I'm not kidding, by over 50%. There are some of you around the country going, your property values have dropped 50%? Yes, truly, they have. And now their ARM has made this payment go up by about $400 a month, and they can't afford it. So they went to the bank, and they tried to get the bank to work something out so that they could stay in their home naturally. They wanted to do the right thing. Told the bank they would continue to pay the original mortgage payment, but they couldn't do the extra $400. How about letting it stay at the original amount, he asked. And the answer was, no, 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 they won't do it. Either pay or face foreclosure. So if you're in his position, what do you do? He's old-fashioned and believes he should pay what he owes, but he can't do it with this new rate. He asked me about it, and frankly, what I told him was to walk away. That's right. If the greedy bank won't work with him in light of this hardship, since they're still getting the original interest rate anyway, not behind in the payments, but if they won't work with him, then just walk away from it. He offered to do the right thing. But no, 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 no. They wanted more. I say let them take the loss because their lack of good sense and compassion. What do you think about it? Do you think that's morally wrong? Do you think that's against everything we stand for? That if we incur a debt, that we sign the paper, that we're responsible for that no matter what? Do you think the banks have any complicity in all this? In this particular case, if the interest rate started out at 6% and now they want to raise it to 7.5%, I don't know the specifics of that. I'm just giving an example. Do you think the banks should work with them? I do.
I most definitely think the banks ought to work with them, but in some cases they will, and some they won't.
And I'll tell you this, I won't shed any tears for any bank that goes belly up, but then again, if you're a bank and you go belly up, you just get bailed out by the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that a lot of small banks around the country are really pissed off because they can't get any of that money. They're only giving it to the big boys. And the little guys are saying, hey, we want some too. We want some too. I guess I don't blame them if, they've putting enough money in the hog trough for the big boys. The little guys ought to be able to work their way in there and get some as well. But I would like to know what everybody thinks on this. Would you walk? Would you stay there and get another part-time job and try and pay the extra $400 a month they're going to soak you right now? What would you do?
I'd say, and it's just my opinion, I would say that if they would have offered to work with him, then I would do everything in my power to try and work with them. But when they just turned a blind eye to the situation and just turned it off and said, no way, we're not going to do anything, we're not going to change our policy. I love that word policy, don't you? Boy, oh boy. If I'm in a dispute with a company, don't ever throw that word at me.
I hate that word. It's our policy. Well, policies, like everything else, are made to be changed and broken. And they can be in specific instances, I'm sure. If only you run across somebody with a little compassion in their heart and all that. But the one thing we'll always be able to count on, if there's one thing in this world you will always be able to count on, then that's good old human greed. I watched that movie again the other night, or part of it once again. It's A Wonderful Life.
And what's the name of the greedy old bastard that everybody hated, Mr. Can't think of his name. As many times as I've seen that movie, all of a sudden I can't remember. Mr. Potter. Mr. Potter. There are just too many Mr. Potters in this world. And he represented greed in that movie. It's absolutely what he represented. Let's see. We got the phone ringing here. We'll answer that before we go to the news at the top of the hour. Coming up right now. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy. It's Dave in Humboldt.
Hi, Dave.
The main variable, I'm not sure if you're trying to deal with it there, is that is it an upside-down mortgage? Has he been paying on it but still owes more than the house is worth?
Oh, way upside down.
Yeah, well, then in that case, I think that any efforts to be noble and make sure the bank gets their fair share and more, I would say walk away and rent an apartment somewhere.
That's what's going to end up happening. The bank could have had these folks stay in that house and pay off their 30-year mortgage, I believe, if they'd only been reasonable. But, mortgages around here, you are lucky if you have one that's not upside down. Of course, you know, it depends on when you bought your home. If you bought a home around this neighborhood, and probably some out your way as well, and in Phoenix and in Las Vegas, if you bought your home 5 or 6 years ago, you're probably any newer than that, you're probably in trouble on a mortgage if you bought a conventional mortgage of any kind.
So much is so wrong all over the place. You know, jobs being shipped out of the country everywhere, unemployment near an all-time high, people homeless, weather problems, and you know, we try more and more to deal with it, but the problem is expanding. You know, the food clinics, the food shelters and whatnot, they don't have any as much as they did have, and there's so many more people needing.
Oh, they're bare. Around here, they're bare. The shelves are bare. They really are.
The harm that has been done to this country in the last several years is just unconscionable.
Dave,
I love your program,
Dave, could you have imagined it, Dave? I don't think I could. I don't think it really hit me until about a year ago that I ever thought that this country economically could be as bad off as we are right now. And I believe me, I don't think it's not the end of it either.
It amazes me that Bush could go anywhere in the world without having shoes thrown at him right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, indeed. I know. I would almost expect it. Like I said earlier in the program today, I think from now on, if I were him, if he does appear any place again, I would have him check their shoes at the door because, oh man,
Thank you for all that you do, Guy.
Thanks, Dave. Good to hear from you.
Perfect.
Bye now. Well, we were talking, and Dave, and I'm glad to have Dave's opinion on that. Upside down is the word. A lot of people are really upside down in their mortgages right now. But we mentioned Mr. Potter. And it's a wonderful life. You know, plain old greed seems to affect almost everyone. And the chance to get something for nothing. And I know a few people who think gambling casinos are evil. Really now. And yet they're put their money on the board of trade or in the hands of stockbrokers to achieve the very same result. That's to get something for nothing. Lots of people think going to Las Vegas, oh, that's bad. That's immoral. But they'll go out and throw down a lot of money in the stock market, or a lot of farmers I know lay money on the board of trade. Same thing. Same thing. Don't tell me it isn't, because it is. Same old thing. The house has the advantage, as usual. We're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. We'll be back for the second hour right after the news, and we hope you'll be with us. You're listening to The Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thank you.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Women workers in unions on average earn 11.2% more than non-union women. Unionized women workers are also more likely to have employer-provided health insurance and are more likely to have an employer-provided pension. That's according to a report from the Center on Economic and Policy Research. The report also says if the percentage of women in unions continues to grow at the rate it has for the past 25 years, women will be a majority of the unionized workforce by 2020. Right now, 45% of union members are women. Smithfield workers in Tar Heel, North Carolina, who voted to join the United Food and Commercial Workers Union after a long and often bitterly fought campaign, are looking forward now to negotiating their first contract. UFCW's Jim Papian.
It's a great victory for the workers in Tar Heel. They stuck together. They maintained unity. And the workers in Tar Heel are very anxious to get to the bargaining table with Smithfield.
A Fiscal Policy Institute report says 120,000 more New Yorkers could be jobless by the end of this year, pushing unemployment to 8.5% to 9%. Less than two-thirds of jobless New Yorkers are getting unemployment checks. 14.4% of young workers are jobless. Among blacks in the city, it's 9.2%. The Fiscal Policy Institute says that real median hourly wages in New York City did not rise between 2001 and 2008. Workers at a tire plant in Texarkana are giving back in hopes of keeping their jobs. Jesse Russell reports.
Employees at a Texarkana, Arkansas Cooper Tire and Rubber Company plant have ratified a three-year renegotiated contract that will freeze their wages over the remaining life of the contract. The contract also shifts more health care costs to employees and includes a one-year freeze of pension contributions by the company. The workers are represented by the United Steelworkers of America, Local 752L, and they made the concessions as the company weighs which of four plants it will close. The union is hoping to reopen the contract and reclaim the concessions once the economy improves. The other three plants are in Findlay, Ohio, Albany, Georgia, and Tupelo, Mississippi. The company is seeking to close a plant in response to higher costs and lower demand.
Mississippi workers hoping for new job opportunities at a Toyota Prius plant currently under construction in the state may have to wait a couple of years longer. Toyota announced on Monday that due to slumping auto sales, the completion of plant construction will be put on hold indefinitely. Jesse Russell has today's economic report.
Thousands of tenants in foreclosed homes are receiving a reprieve from Fannie Mae. The mortgage giant announced on Monday that it plans to sign new leases for 4,000 renters in foreclosed properties. Fannie Mae will act as a landlord for these properties now that the owners have failed to make mortgage payments on time. It is unknown if Freddie Mac will also waive evictions for paid-up renters.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show, 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join the discussion, and we hope you do. Love to hear what's on your mind this afternoon. 866-546-5254, we were talking a little bit about greed before we went to the news. I don't know if it's greed. I don't know if what it is. Has anybody figured out what it is about this Madoff guy that ran that big Ponzi scheme? Did he do it for self-enrichment? Is he worth hundreds of millions of dollars? Or is this just something that got out of hand? I mean, I know he lives the high life and all that, but certainly he's not that rich. It doesn't sound as though he embezzled the money. It just sounds like he lost it. I don't know. But there's another example right there. I mentioned, a lot of people think casinos are bad, and yet they'll go put their hands and their money in the hands of guys like that. They want something for nothing. This Bernie Madoff, he took full advantage, and that's what these guys always do. These con men, they take full advantage of well, in his case, at least hundreds of people who wanted to make more than they ordinarily would have with their investments. More! Give me more! And so they took a chance with a guy who eventually took every last dime of some of their money and threw it into the most gigantic Ponzi operation I've ever heard of. $50 billion? $50 billion? Whew! So many people invested their money with him thinking it was, you know, the gravy train would never end. What was it? He got 10 or 12% over the last 17 years, something like that. Hey, folks, that's not the way it goes. Who's stupid enough to think that things always go up? But there you go. Greed. Greed. That's what allows so many hucksters like a guy like Madoff to get the sucker's money. They promised something for nothing. And, wow. I mean, you know how that Ponzi scheme works. It's the same as these, remember these letters that used to go around, people would get in, remember the, what was it, back in the 80s, the, any of you here, am I the only one heard about this, the airplane game and all that, where, you know, you'd pay a grand to get in, and then you'd get 10,000 back and all that. Was a big Ponzi scheme. It's just the same thing he was doing, only he was doing 50. And of course, the people at the bottom, when the thing stops, they're the ones that get stuck. It's like musical chairs, and there's no chair to sit in sooner or later. Wow, $50 billion. Woo. And he sure preyed upon a lot of the Jewish folks. A lot of the Jewish charities just got ripped by this guy. But will he go to prison and do life in prison or something over all this? I don't know. Who knows what will happen to him? There have been lots of people over the years who have just screwed people royal in the stock market and all that. So it's not something that's unheard of. I had a note here someplace about the guy who was best at this, of screwing people out of money. The guy used to be head of the stock exchange. I don't know what I did with it. Oh, Richard Whitney. Richard Whitney. Have you heard of Richard Whitney? You'll be hearing about this Madoff now. I think he may have passed Richard Whitney. But the New York Stock Exchange, the guy that was ahead of it from the president from 1930 to 1935, he was an American financier. At the same time that Richard Whitney was achieving great success, his brother George had also prospered at Morgan Bank, and by 1930 had been anointed as the likely successor to bank president Thomas Lamont. While Richard Whitney was assumed to be a brilliant financier, he in fact had personally been involved with speculative investments in a variety of businesses that had sustained considerable losses. So to stay afloat, he began borrowing heavily from his brother George, as well as other wealthy friends, and after obtaining loans from as many people as he could, Richard Whitney turned to embezzlement to cover his mounting business losses and to maintain his, that's always there, his extravagant lifestyle. He stole funds from the New York Stock Exchange Gratuity Fund, as well as from the New York Yacht Club, where he served as the treasurer. And in addition, he stole $800,000 worth of bonds from his father-in-law's estate. So, having retired as president of the New York Stock Exchange in 1935, Whitney remained on the board of governors, but in early March 1938, his past began to catch up to him when the comptroller for the New York Stock Exchange reported to his superiors that he had established absolute proof that Richard Whitney was an embezzler and that his company was insolvent. Within days, events snowballed and Whitney and his company would both declare bankruptcy. An astonished public learned of his misdeeds when on March 10th, he was officially charged with embezzlement by New York County District Attorney Thomas E. Dewey. And following his indictment by a grand jury, Richard Whitney was arrested and eventually pleaded guilty. He was sentenced to a term of 5 to 10 years in Sing Sing. And on April 12, 1938, 6,000 people turned up at Grand Central Station to watch this once king of the Wall Street establishment as he was escorted in handcuffs by armed guards onto a train that delivered him to Sing Sing. Well, he died. He lived a quiet life after that, and I think he died in 1974. So, this Madoff guy, man, oh man, $50 billion. I was really shocked by that. And I see the politicians nationally, Schumer of New York and Frank Lautenberg, they're both giving back political donations. This guy was good at passing out political contributions. Schumer, let's see, how much did Schumer get? I don't know. Oh, $6,000. Schumer's personal campaign committee is going to give back the $6,000 he received from Madoff. And Lautenberg giving back the $10,000 that he got. He's going to rid himself of the contribution and says, hey, these guys, they don't ask where the money comes most of the time. Just take it, right? Just take it. 866-546-5254. I have to wonder where we're all going to end up in this whole mess we're in right now. I really believe, and I talk to people every day about the economy, and like many of you, I maybe am a little bit tired of talking about it, but you have to. It's there staring you in the face. And I've had several people tell me, oh, guy, you are far too pessimistic about things. Things will never get as bad as you think they're going to get. Well, now, I haven't gone to the links to store 50-pound bag or 100-pound bags of navy beans yet in the house, although it may come to that. I believe that the economy as we knew it, and I'm talking about the economy as we knew it just a short time ago, I believe that that particular economy is in its death throes. I do believe that. And I think maybe any normality that particular economy that we used to have not too so long ago, maybe a couple of years ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago, I think the normalcy that represents to so many Americans, I think it's gone. And I don't think that type of economy will ever come back in this country. Now, no matter how wistfully we sit here and watch the tide go out, it's not going to come back. And the type of economy that we had for so many years was obviously not good for this country. It was not good for this country. The USA has been permanently scarred by this hyper-consumer society of ours and the financial mess that has been left to the young generations to clean up. I think the job's going to take a long, long time. a long, long time. And I think one of the jobs that Obama's got to do, and he has to, is to get us to a place mentally, and I'm talking about as a country, the working men in the middle class and the poor class in this country, is going to have to get us mentally where we can face the kind of changes that are now necessary, and I believe unavoidable. And I'm talking about changes. I'm talking about big, big, big changes, and we're not there yet mentally. And it's not clear to me yet whether the elected new leadership that we have knows just how severe the required changes will really need to be. Because I believe the American public would be shocked. And I mean that. I'm not saying that to be sensationalistic. I believe the American public would be shocked to grasp what's in store for us economically in this country. That's how I feel about it right now. Probably the worst thing that we could do right now, the worst thing we could do right now would be to mount a campaign to stay where we are. With cheap gas for the moment, for lots of happy motoring out there, and blue lights special shopping sales that are plentiful right now. The economy that we're evolving into will be unglobal. It'll be necessarily local and regional, and it's going to be austere. I believe that. It won't support even our current population. Like it or not, something meaningful has to be done about the overpopulation and immigration in this country. But the new narrative about this whole economic mess that we're in has to be about a managed contraction of some kind. And by managed, I mean a way that doesn't produce civil violence or starvation or any kind of public health disasters. And one of the words I've been looking for, and I always look for, one of the telltale signs to look for is going to be whether the Obama administration bandies about the word growth. And if you hear him use that, it's going to indicate that they really don't understand the kind of changes that we really face right now. I do believe the changes we face are far more severe than most of the people realize. One of the key concepts of the economy that's going to come out of this is that size is important. Size matters. Everything organized at the giant scale is going to suffer some sort of dysfunction and failure. You got your giant companies, your giant governments, your giant institutions. They're all going to get into trouble. And unfortunately, this doesn't bode so well for the Obama team. And it's a logical reason why they shouldn't mount some sort of a campaign to keep things the way they are and support any enterprise that's going to inevitably fail, including many of the government's own operations. I guess what I'm saying, so as not to confuse you, is the best thing that Obama can do is to act as some sort of a wise counselor, a companion-in-chief to people who now have to leave a lot behind in order to move forward. Am I confusing you with what I'm trying to say? Am I being clear with it? I do think we have to leave a lot behind in order to move forward into some sort of a plausible future. And I think he's well suited to do this. He's got the sensibility, he's got the intelligence, but I don't envy him this task because, on the one hand, he has to make sure the public has hope, that we all have the hope of keeping some of the familiar good life that we expect. But he's also got to introduce people to the fact that we're all going to the same unfamiliar new territory, which might not be all that pleasant. The economy that we're moving into is going to have to be one of real work, producing things of value at a scale that's at least consistent with our energy resources. Of course, being raised the way I was, and all, I'm convinced that farming is going to come much closer to the center of all of our economic lives. Because there's going to be a death of this petro-agribusiness. And, you know, I don't know how many of you know, but a lot of you do, that how much agriculture depends on petrochemicals for the yields that we get in the farm. So food production is going to be a matter of life and death here in America. And I think that we're completely unprepared for this kind of change. Because so many people in this country still think the path to success is based on getting a college degree, certifying people for a lifetime of sitting in some sort of an office cubicle someplace. Someday that's going to be looked at as a joke. Now, I'm not dissing education here. But I do believe that the crucial element in this economic transformation that we're undergoing right now is going to be emotional. The American experience for a few generations has produced an adult population. I'm in there. I'm amongst them that are emotionally unprepared for hard times. And for years now, I've wondered how people's resentment's going to be expressed when the supermarket shelves run bare and the cardboard signs get taped over the local gas pump and your cable TV gets cut off for non-payment. You wonder, to put it bluntly, how far gone we really are. You let this thing play out in your mind and you wonder how far away from anarchy we could be in just a few short years. I think people need to understand that. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, the media baselessly used the Blagojevich scandal to forecast clouds over the incoming Obama administration.
Will it cast a cloud, though, over his early days in the White House?
The president-elect cannot start a new administration with any kind of a cloud hanging over him.
I think there's a real cloud developing over the Obama team.
And now we've got this ethical cloud hanging over the head of not only Senator Obama or President-elect Obama, but, you know, all of those people around him.
Many of these forecasts fail to note that there's no actual allegations of wrongdoing by President-elect Obama or his staff. But the most outrageous comment of the day goes to radio host Mark Belling.
You wonder why racism occurs. Why people fear, look what's happening to the neighborhood when a minority person moves in. The answer is because sometimes it does mean an increase in crime.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Love.
my, we are back, and I was just checking things here at the studio and noticed that, what do you know, the stock market has jumped by almost 360 points. Is that right? As of just a few minutes ago. They lowered the the Fed rate. So now the banks can borrow money from one another at anywhere from 0 to 0.25%. And so upon that news, the market went up 360 points. Now, oh well, don't get me started. And also, where else would you expect this to happen? The Adam Walsh murder has been solved. Authorities in South Florida say they've identified the late Otis Toole as the killer of Adam Walsh. Seems like it all ends up here in Florida somehow. Really does. Let's head on over to the phone. Oh, all I got was a busy signal when I hit that. Give us a call back right away, will you? Okay, here we go. It's ringing. What was their name? One ringy dingy, two ringy dingy. Yeah. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Well, it's the Toledo Flash. How you doing, Bill?
Pretty good, Guy. Just wanted to say I'm a little late calling you and wishing you a happy anniversary with your show.
Hey, man, you've been around the show for a long time.
A long time. I missed the old days when you was live, and I think you have the best, absolutely the best talk show that I've, all the ones that I listen to, you're my favorite.
Well, thanks, Bill. That's nice to hear from you. But you know, Bill, we are live right now.
Oh, well, I'm talking about
on the terrestrial, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I've been pretty close to the very beginning with you.
Yeah, I think so. Back when we used to get more hate mail and hate callers than we get nowadays, the locals here, you know, they were good at that.
I remember them all pretty clearly. I had 2008 was a terrible year for me. I was down in Columbus for the Ohio State Michigan game.
Yeah.
But it wasn't the game wasn't why I was down there. I lost my oldest brother that week. The week the game is. Big Ohio State football fan, and he got ran over by a car, and almost lost his two legs about 5 years ago. And living by himself, and nobody found him for about almost a week.
Oh my gosh!
It was really really bad. My mother's 92 years old, and she lost her youngest son out of five brothers. She lost her youngest son in April, and then her eldest son in November.
That's hard to hear. My gosh, my condolences. That's your mom. Mm.
Yeah, it's really been tough on her. But you know, the reason I'm calling, I'll get over that. Is and I'm hoping you're going to be able to stay on the air and. I want to say that you can count on me for something this year, and I'm just hoping that after the first year that maybe some things will break loose for you, and we'll be able to keep you on the air. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, because I don't think I've missed too many of your shows. If I was most likely out of the country in Canada or someplace, but I'm sure that I listened to them when I did come home.
I think a lot of people don't understand how quick some of us folks, and myself being formerly from Ohio, how quick we can get to Canada, huh?
Oh, yeah. For me, it's only about 40 minutes, and I'm over the Ambassador Bridge.
Well, I used to have my boat up on Catawba Island. I could be in Canada in about 15 minutes.
Yeah. You were in a drug runner or something.
Okay. No, but I tell you what, Bill. Now I could admit this now. We go to Pelee Island, which is in Canada, and load up on Crown Royal.
Absolutely. Don't come home light.
No. And you didn't walk it through. See, I'm admitting this terrible federal crime here. And we instead of going through the customs guy there, they had one old boy that went, you know, did the customs work.
I think I hear a knock on your door. Maybe you better get that guy.
We would just walk on down to the road, you know, and we always docked the boat, anchored the boat out where you could walk out to it almost, and just carry a case or so.
that Crown Royal, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, I had the little blue bags.
I probably haven't had five drinks in 5 years, but when I was having a drink back in my earlier days, Crown Royal absolutely was.
That was the good stuff. So we always smuggled a case out about once a year, you know. Bill, you live in a real industrial town, and I just would like to ask you a few things. Like DeVilbiss, are they still going in Toledo?
No, I don't believe they are anymore.
And
I think that anything that you'd name off is in Toledo anymore.
Ooh, the Jeep plant?
Jeep? Now that I can't tell you. No, I used to take and switch the Jeep plant over at Overland Avenue, and I was a big, this automobile crisis has had tears in my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Because I worked for the railroad for over 30 years, and that was all my business, was doing the Ford plant and Ford plant in Elyria, and then up in Cleveland, and then the Jeep in Toledo. And I worked in all those plants, and the nicer people you can ever talk to than those automobile workers. They're all princes. And to hear the hate that those guys have got is, and I watched that Senate when they took and voted that down, and to listen to those guys, the hate that I had in my heart for that Shelby and Corcoran is just unbelievable. I mean, Guy, the reason I was calling you is I come across, you know, you was talking about how you think things are a lot worse than what people really realize that they are. And I come across an article, and it's very short, and I'd like to read it to you.
Please do.
It's only like two paragraphs, Guy. And this guy has a Ph.D. in whatchamacallit, and he's in Saudi Arabia, Prince Sultan University, Saudi Arabia. He's a professor there, Ph.D. in economics. And here's the article. It's, like I said, two paragraphs. It says, mainstream media and Wall Street have reached the consensus that the current credit crisis is the worst since post-World War. George Soros' statement that the world faces the worst financial crisis since World War II is the collective wisdom. The crisis is currently the ultimate scapegoat for all the economic evils that the current plague of global financial system and the global economy, from collapsing stock markets of the world to food shortages in the third world countries. We are repeatedly assured that the ultimate fault lies in the credit crisis itself. If there were no credit crisis, all of these terrible things would never have happened in the economy and the financial markets. The most extraordinary thing is that the mainstream media has never attempted to compare the current economic environment to the one preceding the Great Depression. In essence, it is assumed outright that the Great Depression can never possibly happen again. Even thus, the need for such a comparison. I actually believe that the microeconomic fundamentals today are much worse, so that we are in for a protracted period of economic depression. A depression much worse than the Great Depression, a depression that would likely be remembered in history. It will be remembered in history as the Second Great Depression or the Greater Depression. Okay. As Doug Casey has called it so aptly, here is why I believe this is the case. Now, that's the end of the paragraph, but his reasons are, and I'll name them off, is asset bubbles, scrutinization, excessive leverage, corrupt gatekeepers, financial engineering, lagging regulations, market ideologically, non-transparency, and overvalued real estate, and a total U.S. Credit between the government and people. And you was saying, you know, about the people in the shopping centers. Those credit cards are all maxed out. Their percentages, their rates for to pay the debt on what they owe is, you know, 24, 26, 28%. Maybe some of the lucky ones are still paying 13%. You can't pay a credit card off paying even 13% rate. You can't. You absolutely can't pay it off at 26 or 28%. Uh-huh. And we're in a bad shape. And, you know, once these second default swaps taken hit, and those will probably hit around the later part of 2009, 2010. This hole, we're not soon to, I really do not believe that we're going to dig ourselves out of this hole until maybe in 11 or 12, if we're lucky.
Well, I heard a fellow the other day, an economic expert, say, you know, we were talking about the housing market, and I said, well, hopefully by the middle of next year, it'll hit bottom, and we can start back up again. He said, oh, no.
He said
it's going to be the middle of 2010.
Yeah, and that's what I'm, from everything, and I look at that kind of stuff, you know, I'm kind of like handicapping that, so I don't get out that much. And so most of the time I'm on the computer, you know, listening to my talk shows and things like that. And so I kind of keep an eye on stuff. And I have for, I'd say at least in the 90s, 80s, you know, I was watching, I've always kept an eye. Never was an investor, so I'm not trying to tell you that, you know, I've been a big market guy or anything like that, but I've always watched this stuff.
Well, obviously, Bill, a lot of people who have been investors don't know the score either, you know. There's been a lot
because,
of
do
lot
they
of
have that? Is that guy that Mara Madoff, does that guy have the right last name or what?
Yeah.
He paid off with a lot of people's money, didn't he?
50. You know, that's hard to fathom that somebody
could...
Well,
you know, like what you're saying, I mean, excuse me for interrupting. That is so much money. I mean, yeah, we've heard nothing but billions and billions of dollars for the last 4 or 5 months. I mean, everybody has been thinking in billions. But to think that, remember when they tried to pass that for the child health care, what do they call that plan, the S-CHIP plan?
Yeah, S-CHIP plan. Yeah.
S-CHIP plan. They tried to get $10 billion,
mm-hmm.
and that was for 5 years to take care of I don't know how many millions of children to give them some kind of health care. And they voted that down because they said, we're not going to break that budget for this $10 billion. Think of this guy running off and making off with $50 billion. It's hard to believe. And God, this won't get settled. You know, this is a small thing we're talking about. It's huge in what was stolen. But after looking at everything and how everything's shaping up, it's pretty scary, guy.
It is.
It really is. What I feel, I don't worry about myself or my wife. But I worry about my children. I got three children that are, two of them are in their 20s, and my daughter, who is the oldest, is like 33 or 34 years old, you know? And that's who I worry about. Because what are they looking at in these next years coming down the road? Me and you and people in our age group have never seen something at what is possibly going to confront our country.
I think you're right.
We haven't never seen that.
Nope.
Our parents have.
Parents did.
But we haven't.
I always heard it from my parents, was constantly reminded about it by my parents. My parents were both Depression children, heard about it all the time, but never considered, and we're not there yet, but never considered that would ever face those kinds of hardships. Never considered it, honestly.
You know, Guy, maybe, I don't believe you are trying to blow smoke, and you know I'm not, nobody is hoping for this. Nobody is saying,
no.
I think, you know, this is going to happen, and these guys deserve it on Wall Street, you know, nobody is hoping for this. But if you're a person that's crossing a busy street, you better take and look both ways so you don't take and, you know, get hit. And I think a lot of people have their heads in the sand and are thinking that, like most of your recessions, it lasts maybe a year at the most, or a year and a half, and we'll come out of it. We're going to look pretty good. We'll look better coming out than we were going in. But I don't think that's the case this time. I hope very much that I'm wrong.
I hope so, too.
I've got a son that's graduating this spring from college. He's going to be going out in the job market. Smart kid. He's done really good in school. Jesus, I just worry about him every day.
Yeah, he's facing a tough job market. Tough job.
Yeah.
Market.
He's always had a job, Guy. He's a hard worker. He's always done good in school and that. And I'm pretty proud of him. But boy, do I worry. And I worry a lot that, you know, how's this going to come out?
Well, Bill, I hope that about 5 years from now, you can call one day, call the show, and we'll laugh and we'll go, remember that back about 5 years ago?
Yeah.
When we said,
you want to, we won't forget 2008.
No, but would it be good if we can look back and say how stupid we were?
Yeah, I hope so. I surely do. Listen, Guy, I don't want to take up, maybe you got some more callers who are going to call in. You know, I've always, when I could, I always tried to support your show as much as I can. And I will be sending something. It won't be much, Guy, but it'll be something. At least I know it'll take and get you out of that deficit that you was in on that second day, what you talked about. And I said, God, man, can't somebody break free and help me out? Because I just, to think that I won't be able to go online and listen to your shows is not a day I'm looking forward to, Guy.
Well, we're doing everything we can to prevent that. Bill, thanks so much.
Yeah, I thank you, Guy. And like I said, and plus I'm going to have an anniversary gift there for you, too.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Bill.
I thank you very much, Guy, and you have a good one today.
Well, bye now. I want to once again mention, I want to thank Eric and John and Carolyn and Scott and Maura. You know why, and we thank you very much for helping out very, very much. Eric, John, and Carolyn, Scott, and Maura. And we've got some others we want to talk about, too, in the next couple of days. So had to start someplace. Did you see that Dick Cheney, says he has no regrets when it comes to terrorist interrogations. No regrets. Vice President Dick Cheney says the interrogation tactics that they used on the terrorist suspects, and including Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and he was being interviewed by ABC, and he said he supported all the methods used to obtain information from suspect, including the controversial tactic known as waterboarding. But when he was asked if he felt it was appropriate to use it, Cheney said, I do. And the vice president said he was aware of all the interrogation tactics. Hell, he probably improved them himself. But he said he was aware of all the interrogation tactics used and was involved in getting the, quote, process cleared. You bet he was. Cheney said the interrogation of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed resulted in a wealth of valuable information, and said 3 or 4 years ago, half of the info the U.S. had on al-Qaeda came from that one source. Said it was a remarkably successful effort. Well, well, well. Thank God for Dick Cheney. He's been a boon to the country, has he not? Aren't we very, very proud of Dick Cheney? And I didn't know this till today. I don't know where, if I had my head in the sand or what. I was just jumping around here on a couple of different subjects. But I didn't know that Sarah Palin's church had been set on fire. They said it was arson. There was some sort of accelerant poured on the exterior. And it was heavily damaged. I did not know that until just about noon today. The investigators with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives said the accelerant was poured at several locations around the exterior of the Wasilla Bible Church, including the entrances. Authorities say a small group of people, including two children, were inside the church when the blaze ignited Friday night, but no one was injured. Now that's people inside a church and you light it on fire. Come on. Governor Palin was not at the church at the time of the fire, but she visited over the weekend and told the assistant pastor she was sorry if the blaze was somehow connected to the, quote, undeserved negative attention, end quote, the church has received since she was named the Republican vice presidential candidate. So far, they don't have any suspects or motive. Well, I hope they catch whoever did. That's a dastardly thing to do. Terrible thing to do. And it's official. A lot of you already know this, but it is now official that Barack Obama is officially elected. The Electoral College met yesterday, and of the 131 million people who voted, it came down to 365 to 173. A resounding victory. And he's the 44th president, and it did become official yesterday. And, of course, we've got that mysterious group known as the Electoral College and performed their constitutional process and cast their ballots. But there were more than $131 million people who voted on Election Day. But it's the outcome of the Electoral College's largely ceremonial vote that really makes it official. 538 electors in all 50 states and the District of Columbia, and they cast their ballots yesterday in accordance with the popular votes in their state. And the process, as you might imagine, was a very poignant event in many states where electors reflected on the significance of the country's first black president. Henry Marsh, an African-American state senator in Virginia, recalled his father working 6 days a week as a waiter because that's the only job he could get as a black man. How times have changed. And in Pennsylvania, pro football, and I know everybody remembers this guy, pro football Hall of Famer turned elector Franco Harris. Remember the Immaculate Reception? Franco Harris said that he has signed his autograph thousands of times, but writing his name to make Barack Obama the 44th president was, quote, the most valuable thing he ever signed his name to. What a nice sentiment from Franco Harris. Very nice. 866-546-5254. What do you think about Carolyn Kennedy now obviously overtly seeking the appointment as senator, junior senator from the state of New York? I have very ambivalent feelings about it. I think the world and all of Carolyn Kennedy and the Kennedy family. And I feel that she's intellectually qualified to be a senator. And I feel that she's been involved enough in public causes and events to qualify her. Possibly more than many senators that we have. But I'm a bit ambivalent. So I'm a bit touchy when it comes to these political dynasties. I am. On the one hand, I do love the Kennedy family. She would be the fourth United States Senator, John, Robert, Ted, and then her, the fourth Kennedy to be a United States Senator. But I'm not so sure that's necessarily a good thing. I don't know. Someone getting the appointment or getting elected just because of their name rubs me the wrong way in one way. And in another way, I like the Kennedys. But there's just something about having that name thing, getting you where you are, that does bother me. It's not necessarily the American way. Well, it is. But I'm not so sure it's the right way. It's just like this Bush dynasty now. We had Senator Bush, and we had this Daddy Bush, 41, and now this Bush, 43, and we got Jeb Bush coming up, and he's going to try and run for something again, I'm sure of it. And I'm just not so sure how much I like all that. I don't know. We'll have to see what comes of it. The alternative would be Andrew Cuomo. There again, another one who probably has helped make his way because of his name. I don't know. Like I said, I'm a bit ambivalent about it. I've got feelings that, on the one hand, I think it's great, and the other hand, I don't. So, once again, I'm in a gray area there. I don't get in too many gray areas, I don't think. So we'll see if that happens. What the governor of New York will do about that is anybody's guess at this point. I really think it is. Blagojevich. They've got everything in process now in Illinois to impeach him. What was the vote? I don't know that. I remember the number, but wasn't it something like 103-0 in the Illinois House to impeach the guy? Really well liked, don't you think? Man, when you get shut out and you can't even get one vote to vote against your impeachment, I think that says quite a bit about you, don't you think? Wow. I could be wrong in that number, but it was something like 103-0. I mean, there wasn't a single person that voted to keep this guy from being impeached. Remarkable. Just remarkable. So he's going to go down the tubes. And the question is now, do they have him dead to rights on these things? Or is he in a gray area where he just talked about it but didn't do anything and so they can't get him? I don't know. Isn't it amazing how the Republicans are trying to make hay out of this thing against Obama? How many times have you heard the past few days of, well, Obama's got to come clean, and his failure to come clean, come clean, come clean? They've used that over and over and over again. Even Karl Rove's been in there trying to link Obama to Blagojevich. And so you know it's in the talking points, and they're going to hammer that. They're going to hammer that. Just in fact, Karl Rove actually came out and said that Obama should not pay any attention to what Patrick Fitzgerald said, not to discuss the case, that he ought to go ahead and discuss it anyway. I don't know, but when a federal prosecutor says don't discuss the case, I think it behooves whoever he's telling this to not to discuss the case. He is the federal prosecutor. So, you know, last week we heard Karl Rove on Fox, of course, talking about how Obama, well, in no way is he involved with the Blagojevich scandal. He wouldn't say it. Now this week, well, you know, there might be a link there somehow. There might be I don't know. But the Walking Dead Republican Party, and that is what they are if they stay in the same ideological suit that they're in right now. They are the Walking Dead political party. Just let them keep up with that, and they'll show what asses they really are. I believe that. Obama, if Obama's involved in any of that, any illicit discussions, anything that was actually wrong in this thing, I would be shocked. Shocked. Did Rahm Emanuel talk to some of Blagojevich's people? Yes. Did he talk to Blagojevich himself? They say no. Even if he did, he didn't offer to do anything illegal, they say. And I will believe our incoming president on that any day. Any day, until proven that he can't be trusted, I will trust him explicitly. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program today. We appreciate your listenership so very much. And once again, I want to thank Maureen, Scott, and John, and Eric, and those of you that have helped contribute to the program. Listen, folks, we are in need of financial assistance on the program. We are. We've been footing most of the bill ourselves for a long, long time, and it would be very good if you could help out if you have not done so. So if you never have, why, if you throw $5 or $10 in on PayPal on the website, it would be much appreciated. If you can do a monthly thing, we appreciate that as